This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mamie Rosenberg.
The 3 million strong National Education Association is the largest labor union and professional interest group in the United States and says no one should listen to Trump on reopening schools.
We're joined by Mary Kussler, Senior Director for Advocacy of the NEA, whose union is responding forcefully to one of the latest of Trump's hysterical tweets, all in caps, "Schools must open in the fall." Mary, why don't we begin with, let's before we even get to the issue of what is nothing short of kind of bullying or Trump's threats to cut federal aid if schools don't reopen, let's talk about, as an educator and indeed an educator that is representing the nation's largest professional employee organization, which is more than 3 million elementary and secondary school teachers, higher education faculty, education support professionals, school administrators, retired educators, students preparing to become teachers, etc. Talk about what COVID-19 and its impact has been and what the concerns are of the educational community. And of course, with a particular additional emphasis on its impact for the communities of color that you all represent.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me today. This is a really important time, and it's a really important time to make sure that we are raising the voices of the educators, the millions of educators across this country that work with the millions of students who rely on them every day. No one went into this school year planning for a global pandemic. And yet the reality is that when March came and states ripple effect and shut down schools, they didn't actually shut down schools, they shut down school buildings. Across the nation, educators quickly changed gears to figure out how they can continue to make sure that students across the country were continuing to receive the education we all know that they deserve to succeed in life. But the real big moment that came with this is not only how quickly we had to change gears, how unprepared we were for the moment, but to go to that last point you just raised, what it really exposed were the inequities that we have built into our public education system in this country, where a child's zip code truly does determine their education. So all of a sudden, we saw that when we moved to a full distance learning model in many of our school districts across the country, people for the first time seem to understand, wow, there are families who don't have any sort of technological devices or whose only access to the internet is over a phone. Oh, well, maybe we can't do classes over broadband because the family can't afford the data that it's taking up on their phone. Oh my goodness, what about this family? Doesn't he even have access to broadband? My in-laws live in rural central Texas, outside of Waco, and in their town, the only thing they have access to is dial-up internet. Now, luckily, in their house, there are no school-age children trying to learn anything, but we know their neighbors are not going to have the same sort of access. And so these inequities are ones that we have known to be baked into the system. We know that the money has been distorted in the way that we fund public education. And we also know that in this attempt to move our educational system to meet the time of a global pandemic, there is also an opportunity, but also an obligation to make sure as educators, as America, we're doing everything we can to erase these inequities that are so hurting our communities of color, our black and brown children especially.
What experience have we had so far with some of these states reopening in terms of their policy towards schools?
So I would say that it's varied. There is nobody who wants our students to go back to school more than America's educators. Our members had their children, their students ripped away from them this spring. They did not get to say goodbye. They did not always get the opportunity to check on them. And we know that many of them kind of slipped under the radar once the school buildings had to shut down. Our educators want to be back in the classroom with these students, but they also know they cannot sacrifice the health of their students or themselves and their families in order to do so. And so what we really see is a hodgepodge of how states are addressing this. And the states that tend to have more success are those that are working really hard with their educators to figure out how we should open it. We should all be listening to the health experts and not politicians as to when we should open schools. But we should definitely be listening to and working with educators as to how to open schools. So we know all over the country, there are different models of how that's happening. We see places where we're giving immunocompromised educators and students the option to do distance learning full time. We see my own children in their school district in Virginia have the option of full distance learning, and we have the option of doing a hybrid model where my two boys will go to school 2 days a week and then receive a level of distance learning 3 days a week. And all of this is an attempt to distance children out, to put in place the minimum health standards that are going to be needed to slow the risk of transmission of COVID between students, but then also between those students to adults that they are around. But then we also know that just this week, Governor DeSantis has been sort of drawing a line in the sand repeatedly. And what he has said is that he has really adopted President Trump's line that schools must open 5 days a week for students as an option if they are going to receive any funding. And not only that, he compared the opening of Walmart in Florida to why we need to open schools. If we're going to consider, you know, we saw that Walmarts were essential, we need to open our schools. Well, there's a real difference between opening stores, which have higher health and safety regulations than schools right now, where people can choose to go to, versus a school building where we are compelling minors to show up every single day.
I'm interested in your thoughts. If we can maybe backtrack a little, there's the context which we, of course, will continue to drill into of the bullying and the pronouncement of Mr. Trump and Secretary Betsy DeVos, who echoed Trump's call telling state governors that schools must reopen. But I want to just contextualize this, because it doesn't come out of any of nowhere. So your thoughts on the response that Betsy DeVos and Trump has had to the public education system prior to their response to it, prior to the advent of this terrifying contagion?
Well, I think if we're really going to take a step back, I think it's really important to go back to one of the earlier interviews in Secretary DeVos's tenure as the secretary of our public education system in this country, where she admitted on 60 Minutes that she herself had never been to a public school, that none of her children have ever been to a public school, and that she hadn't even really visited public schools. The last person we should be asking for advice on what needs to be happening in public schools is Secretary DeVos. The last people we need to ask what is the safe and healthy thing to do for America's students are the president and the secretary. We know that this is a time where we have to be asking true epidemiologists and health experts what's best in the scenario and not leaving it up to politicians who are looking to win an election in the fall. When you really boil this down to what they have been sort of hardening down in, including today where the president was tweeting that distance learning never works, which is an amazing thing because in rural communities, distance learning has been part of their education system for many years. You really have them placing an ultimatum on states and districts that if you do not open up 5 days a week for you, if you do not open up full time for your students, we're going to take money from you. So the money that the federal government provides to schools specifically goes to provide and support students with high poverty families and backgrounds, students with disabilities. Are these really the students who we want to pay the price for callous decisions that our politicians are making at this time? It is not fair to ask the students to bear the brunt and the repercussions of what are truly political decisions that have nothing to do about what's best for America's students and America's educators.
Not only the money that's currently being appropriated for schools, but there are bills in Congress that would affect education with regard to public employees' funding, which has been under pressure because of the budget crisis in the states. How would Trump's budget proposals affect education?
Absolutely. Well, I think what we would even like to take a step back on is the federal government only provides about 8 to 10% of education funding in K-12 education across the country. The majority of the money going to fund our education system is coming from state and local governments. And what we know is that the recession that the Federal Reserve and others have been talking about and documenting, the high unemployment rates going on around this country, all impact the amount of revenue that state and localities are able to bring in. So right now, from NEA's perspective, we are anticipating that without additional support from the federal government, we are expecting that 1.9 million educators are going to lose their jobs in the next 2 to 3 years. 1.9 million. And we know, tragically, that the very first people who lose their job in that scenario tend to be the school nurses, the school counselors, the school social workers, the very people we need to make sure are in schools right now as we go back to. If we get towards eliminating positions in the teacher ranks, we know that that's all going to do nothing more than raise class sizes at a time we're supposed to be socially distancing. This is why we have already applauded the House of Representatives in their action that they have taken in passing the HEROES Act, which included specific money for state and local entities, as well as money specifically for education, over $100 billion of education money at the state and local level. And we are calling on the United States Senate to act now to make sure that they are going to provide that needed financial relief to our state and localities, but especially our school districts, so that we can make sure that we are keeping educators in the classroom with their students, but also able to afford the PPE that we know our educators need as frontline workers. Okay, the partitions we need in classroom, everything we need to sort of comply with the best practices at this point, limited though they are, coming out of the CDC for how to protect students.
Mary, it sounds like when we continue to drill down into the rationalizations of DeVos and Trump saying, open these schools and disregarding the health experts and the educators on how best to reopen schools and when, would you say that the whole ideological sway or the whole way this administration relates to education and elementary and public schools and public employees in the public schools as well is really nothing more than handmaidens to facilitate making it look like the economy can and will return to business as usual towards his reelection campaign? Has there been any indication during these four-plus years, or 4 years certainly, that are coming to a conclusion that this is an administration that values public education and values the lives of the children and the concept of public education, much less those who are the teachers and those who administratively keep the system functioning?
Absolutely not. I think what we have seen from this administration at every turn has been an effort to privatize, to move public dollars to private schools, to devalue the importance of our public education system and the students who attend it. We've seen that straight from appointing the least qualified Secretary of Education in the history of the Department of Education to the point that she barely got confirmed by the Senate and needed the Vice President to break a tie, straight down to every turn they get, they're defunding public education and looking for more dollars to go towards private education. From the premise of your question, as a mom of two boys, ages, I have a rising third grader and a rising seventh grader, and I, like many in this country, have been working from home since March. I would love my students, my kids, to go back to school. I would love that. It would make my work life a lot easier. And so I really do identify with parents in this country who want to get their kids back to school. But fundamentally, as a parent, I am not going to send my kids into a dangerous situation either for them or for the other adults in the building. The educators are in the building. From the president's standpoint, all he's looking at is trying to win in November, and he knows he cannot win with the economy looking like it does right now. And he knows the only way to get the economy back to what he would like it to be is for people to get back to work in person. And the only way that that's going to happen is if people aren't having to worry about taking care of their children at the same time. When they make the international comparisons to opening up schools in other countries, what they miss in every single one of those comparisons is that those countries got the coronavirus under control. Their citizens did masks, did social distancing, did quarantine, and took it seriously. There are very few places in this country that are meeting those recommendations at this point, and therefore we should not be doing an experiment with the children of this country just to make sure that the president can get reelected in the fall.
So I hear your passion for the 51 million public school students who don't have an advocate in the White House and don't have an advocate to see us through, we the public, through this terrifying contagion that is stalking the land. One of the things that I know that the National Education Association has also advocated in terms of Congress is that you propose $175 billion in the next economic recovery stimulus bill to an education stabilization fund. Talk about that and what that money means to beginning to deal with the inequities in education, the disparities as we are in this watershed moment, if you will, of Black mm-hmm. Lives Matter. What does it mean, and how critical is it for us to keep our eye on the prize, notwithstanding the bullying that is in the White House, to make sure that we have an equitable, meaningful, progressive public education system alive and healthy and yet better still?
We know that we're really not going to be able to open schools safely without additional resources. And that $175 billion we are looking for public education, both K-12 and higher ed in this country, at a minimum, is exactly what will be needed. And I really put it in three buckets. Number one, the first part of that money needs to be used for the ABCs of reopening school. This idea of making sure all hands are on deck, meaning we're having an inclusive process, that we have social distancing buffers and social distancing standards of 6 feet, that we are able to clean our schools more regularly with disinfectants that are approved, that we have a detection system in order to isolate individuals who come in contact with the coronavirus, that equity that we are going to do that make sure that every student, regardless of their zip code, has access to the learning they deserve, also regardless of the color of their skin, exactly as you said. And finally, F, that funding that we need to make all this a reality, to make sure that we can open our schools. That's really that first bucket. The second part of this is really making sure that we're going to prevent the job layoffs that we know have already started. 2,000 educators let go in the state of Massachusetts. We've seen contingent faculty released from universities. We know that these layoffs are happening and more are to come. And the ones who suffer most in that scenario are not only the individuals who are losing their jobs, but the students who will have less access to educators. And then finally, much like you said, this Black Lives Matter moment is not just a moment, it's a movement that is actually shifting public awareness. And so while this pandemic has exposed extreme inequities in our society, we need to use that money to help eliminate those disparities, those communities of color where we know COVID-19 has hit harder, those communities of color where we know that people have lost their jobs at a higher rate, those students are facing, in many cases, more trauma issues that they're going to be bringing to school, and we need to make sure that we're doing everything in our power to support those students. And without that $175 billion, we're not sure how we get there.
Your voice and your whole temperament is ferocious as to advocacy. So in the final analysis, can you punctuate this discussion? What the hell is to be done to make sure that we have communities that are protected, that we preserve and enhance public education? One of the strategic things that can help us build towards the recognition and the realization of the promise of democracy. That's what I think public education is. So how do we end this passionate, important discussion, continue to take this battle?
Where we continue to take this battle is we cannot do it alone. Educators cannot be the only one chanting for the health and safety of our students being centered to the conversation around reopening schools in this country, around the future of public education. We need parents to join with us. We need parents asking these critical questions of their local school districts, of their policymakers. We need parents stepping up and joining with their educators in their local communities. And most of all, if we really want to fix this system and really want to stand up for students, we need everybody in this country to get out and vote this fall. No one can stand on the sidelines, and no one can think that the current president has no ability to impact their lives. He's doing that every day, and we need to step up and make sure that every vote is counted and that everyone knows that their vote will matter this fall.
And I just have to add one little caveat. We have not really extolled the value and the importance of our public education teachers. And you've been gracious about talking what it means for the students and community, etc. But the issue of the health and safety of our teaching staff, what do they deserve out of this? Part of the whole reality that we have an administration that seems to view workers as nothing more than cannon fodder to churn up the industries, crank them up and get them rolling, but each one of us is nothing within that process. So what are the lives of our educators, which is part of this process of not establishing meaningful national protocols to deal with COVID about when we talk about the opening of schools, summarily demanding immediately their opening?
There are two things that are part of that, and one is centrally the importance of workers' role and voice in their own workplaces. And what goes in hand with that is the importance of collectively bargaining and having unions. That is the educators through their unions who are stepping up to make sure that the safe and health of their students and themselves are taken into consideration right now. That is magnifying that individual first grade teacher's voice into a national dialogue. This is just one aspect of the power of collective bargaining of protecting workers in this country, because it is these unions, such as our own NEA, the National Education Association, that every day are making sure that we are getting up to support America's public school educators and the students they work with, and know that with that collective voice, so much more can get done for workers and their students.
Mary, you're
Thank
quite
you
wonderful.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. They say educate, 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 and you certainly have. You're wonderful in your passion, and thank
really
you so much for joining us. I truly appreciate it.
I appreciate the opportunity you have given us today to tell this story, because it is an important one. So thank you very much.
You've been listening to Mary Cussler, Senior Director for Advocacy of the National Education Association, who says hell no to Trump's bullying demand that schools must open in the fall.
This is Building Bridges, produced by Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Stay strong, stay well.